You're tuned to Tidings, and I'm Hazel Khan, sitting with my friend Shireen in my house in Matatuck. Shireen Pasha is my friend. She's a filmmaker, and I'm her fan. There are two things that Shireen has recently done that I'm particularly intrigued by. Shireen, first of all, welcome to Tidings on WPKN.
Thank you, Hazel. This time I'm meeting you after many years. It's a real pleasure to be here.
After many years, and in America. I've only seen you in Pakistan.
Yeah.
It's lovely, lovely to have you here.
I want you to tell me the story of Lucknow, a large city in northern India, the capital of Uttar Pradesh.
It's a historical story, but it leads to a story of a woman who died a few years ago, who you greatly admired. Her name was Hima. I never met her. I've seen only the film. So tell me what is so special about Lucknow, and tell me where Lucknow fits into everything else that we're going to talk about.
Well, Lucknow is a city in the state of Awadh.
Awadh,
yeah. One of the richest states in India, and known as the Garden City and the Queen City pre-partition. It was considered an extraordinary province because it was very highly agricultural. It has rivers. But in terms of historicity, is some other angles which make it really spectacular. Despite its small size, it is known for its 17th and early 18th century culture that was noticed as a fairyland kind of a status. That it had a series of nawabs and rajas or kings, and it had a predominant courtesan culture.
Courtesan's not a word one hears very often these days, courtesan.
But to fit it into a larger setting, India's Mughal Empire has always been such a great thing that everybody knows about as an empire. Seven generation of Mughal kings with things like the Taj Mahal and the forts of Delhi and forts of Lahore to its, string of
Shalimar Gardens.
The Shalimar Gardens and the feats of all the Mughal kings. So when the Mughal Empire started disintegrating due to now huge and vast territorial gains that they had already got, and weakening administration and more warfare. So that put a lot of burden, and the decline of the empire began somewhere around the seventh generation of the Mughals.
What century was that?
This was now the 17th.
That was the end of the Mughal Empire?
Yeah, that 17th century. So somewhere where that was the beginning of the decline. So the empire already had accumulated a lot of amazing people in terms of art to its courts, and in terms of music, miniature arts, and discourse, and literature, and poetry.
When you say courts, you don't mean legal, judicial courts. You mean kingly, princely courts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
The court of like St. James
and
or something.
Absolutely. And the Mughal courts, of course, were their capital was Agra, where the Taj Mahal is, and Delhi as the capital of northern India. So they had accumulated all their embellishments and all their fanfare in a very, very vast of domains of the arts. When the decline began, the smaller states of India, which happened to be something like 450 smaller states, with 450 rajas and 450 armies which were established, they had always eyed the capital cities as, something that they would want to be. Wannabes. They admired that the capital cities had courts which had the kind of embellishments and people around them, which highbrow poets and musicians, and had the best of everything the world could have offered. When the decline began, some of these artists started looking for new patrons, and the rajas all kind of started bidding for them to come to their states. So these new states started to make their bids for them to come.
You know, it reminds me of Amazon looking for headquarters. It's all these big cities and states bidding to have Amazon's headquarters in their state.
There
sort of
are.
A bit like that in a
there
way, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the smaller states are kind of, you know, thinking, oh my God, I wish we could have them come over to our sites. So in that atmosphere, Awadh was one of the states which drew a lot of these artists and singers and dancers. So Awadh became...
Of which Lucknow is the capital.
And so Awadh managed to get a lot of artists and artisans into their empire, and thereby they cultivated a new kind of a culture. The court started showing. Already they had rajas there in the 17th century, that within 100 years there were about 8 rajas who had ruled in Awadh and in Lucknow. So these rajas were calling in and becoming the new patrons for them. And a unique kind of architecture started growing in Lucknow. Initially it began with architecture. Something which has a lot of edifices, which has to be done quickly and which can have the maximum amount of show element in it. So it was an edifice, a facade-oriented culture which started, like it has to have glitter and it has to have glamour. But in taste, because these people were already coming from very refined backgrounds. So it wasn't that they had to show off in a way. But the grandeur of it was like facade-like, that it has to be quick. So it turned out to be like a pack of cards that you can, you know, just...
But it could fall like a house of cards?
Well, it's still standing, a lot of that.
Oh, okay.
But you have the feeling that when you're on the other side of the facade, the impact is not there. And when you are on the side of the emperor or the raja or the maharaja, then you can, from that perspective, you can see the facade as fully as you can from someone standpoint. But the minute you go through it and onto the other side, it seems like that's the
facade
end.
works as a facade.
So
that's interesting.
But by the time the 10th Raja was there, was the time that the British had also shown their motives of taking over. Well, the East India Company had already moved in the 17th century, but the time we are talking about is closer to the late 17th century and the beginning of the 19th century, that there were serious rebellions from many states. And Awadh was very much in the eye of the British, because they could see that this was a state that had given loans to them when they needed. That was the kind
of money. To the British, they gave loans?
Yeah. When they needed cash for their, you know, ventures over there. So when the last Raja came, the glamour died out with that. They knew that it was bad times coming, because there were British garrisons, British troops were positioned in most of the states which were contentious. In this atmosphere, which had already been there for 100 years, with all now the arts and crafts people housed and performing, and the Rajas themselves had now started taking a lot of interest, and this 10th Raja. So by the time the British started now very seriously campaigning and threatening and asking all the colonies to behave themselves and, you know, punishing the Rajas if they were not to obey them, and, you know, putting a lot of pressure on India. So the last Maharaja of Awadh was Wajid Ali Shah. So Wajid Ali Shah by now had inherited one century of people who had come in, you know, from the Mughal courts. And he, being a character who wanted to play with the arts and literature and poetry, he began to be very interested in music and the finer arts. So he had started developing his kingdom according to that. Already it was a moneyed state. Already they had artists who had come from the larger Mughal courts. So it was easy for him to blend it all together according to his interests, which initially seemed arbitrary, but today it is regarded that he had the knack and he had the talent, and he began something which was important for the later generations, that he started looking at dance as a form of art, and theater, which had not previously been understood as much, was now being put together with all the stories combined with other genres of literature and music.
Mm.
And in fact, inventing new ragas and new forms of poetry. So the arts started flourishing in Lucknow. But some of the older traditions also flourished here. The women from all these various centers also were part of the rush to get into Awadh because it was the new patron state. This is something which had been part of the Mughal courts as well. I mean, the harems of the Mughal, like 3,000 singing women in their main courts. And when that disintegrated and, you know, the harems let go of all the artists who were now seeking new markets, so to speak, and the best market that they were finding were in Awadh. So there was a huge cluster of people who were wanting new patrons, new talent, one would say, in terms of music and dancing. Mm. And also kind of a courtesan culture formed there alongside. Yeah, Mughals had a way of dividing. They had first their queens, the highest woman who would be part of the queen.
Maharanis.
The second tier of women were concubines. And concubines were accepted as part of the king's domain and to be respected for that. And the children of concubines were considered to be princes and could be in the line of inheritance as well. And the third category would be slaves or women who were like entertainers and singers around the court. So this third category was the largest, which could be moved around, could be gifted. I mean, they were in that category of slavery almost. So all of these, when the mixture came into other smaller states, then Awadh got its shim and they developed with other local characteristics and requirements. They adjusted it into a kind of a culture, which is called the Lucknowi culture. So in the Lucknowi culture, there is a strong
that's
emphasis.
Of Lucknow.
That's
Lucknowi,
of Lucknow.
Lucknow.
Yeah, yeah. It's not looked down upon, number one, the courtesan culture.
Is the courtesan the same as the concubine? No.
It's another form of having wives, I would imagine. Their children are accepted and they are solely devoted to the king. They cannot leave the king and get married or divorced or things like that. The courtesan here developed in its role as offering entertainment to gentlemen of this area. And the way they are described is of a very high culture. If they need to hear poetry or come and see a good classical dance or hear a good musician play or have somebody host them in a very extremely refined way, over-refined, one would imagine. I'm often reminded of the Rococo culture in the history of Western civilization, that after Baroque, when the Rococo came, it seemed so frivolous and yet so thin in front of the Baroque.
Did you have any examples of how this Rococo culture was in terms of behavior, etiquette, or greeting?
Yeah, there is a kind of everybody has of that. And that is that they would be adjoining houses, but very stately looking fronts, and a lot of place for the horse carriages to stand at the ground level. And then there would be lavish steps which would go up into kind of boudoirs. And then there would be sitting arrangement all around with large pillows and round pillows, the takiyas. And the musicians would be playing at one corner of it. There would be lot of lights and chandeliers and rich carpets, and they would be entertained with paan and the paan, the betel leaf
yeah.
that they chew, and tobacco, and I would imagine alcohol.
Yeah,
I
even
would
though
imagine
it was a Muslim,
even though it was a Muslim
culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Shireen Pasha is talking about Lucknow. This is Tidings on WPKN Radio.
But poets around that time, like Mirza Ghalib and a lot of other poets, are known to be, admirers of wine coming in from the West, and they talk about it. So I would imagine that even in that state, there would be available.
So the courtesan house was next to the... No, it
would be in an area which is exclusively meant for courtesans.
Joining.
A whole bazaar. I mean, the houses would be adjoining. It would be like 10 houses belonging to 10 organizations running these places. So all of them would have their exteriors where they would go, like small palaces. And once you are up there, then you're mesmerized with all the layout and the luxury which was created for it. And there would be always musicians in that area. There would be a lot of poetry, and these women were highly skilled. They were trained. There would be an older generation to oversee things, and there would be the younger generation which would be trained.
These are all women?
In the houses, and there would be males to guard, and there would be male musicians.
Women didn't play instruments, right?
Sitar would be an exception, and tanpura, the one which goes behind the singers, or you sing with it, with the strings. Most of the time it would be a female playing. A harmonium is played mm-hmm. by a woman when she sings, because she can guide herself better. Mm-hmm. But tabla, the drums, something like violin, a variation on violin like sarangi, which I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean, sarangi mm-hmm. is very rarely played by any woman. So there were instruments mm-hmm. which were, like either male or female. And there would be the ghungroos, which you put at the bells which you tie on your feet, would be one sound which would be coming from so many houses altogether. People have talked about entering this road and walking through that road, and you could hear from the sound of the bells of the feet of the dancers that what kind of entertainment is going on there.
So when you said there were 10 different houses, different organizations, but each of them different had courtesans in them.
That was the road meant for
courtesan
them.
Central.
That was the center of it. And everybody knew it. All the roads meet. There was a meeting point there, and there all the horse carriages would stand there. And
the carriage would be from, say, Nawab.
Yeah, Nawab is
coming
to. Yeah, and he has four escorts, and those four escorts would sit there. Then they would be a congregation for the escort, some tea, some, small cafes in the main bazaar. And then just a little bit recessed of that would be these elaborate kind of townhouse. So it was a whole locality and a whole culture which went with it. Then it became a kind of a norm in Lucknow that they started regarding that this is the place to learn manners and etiquette. And if you want to be spending an evening for entertainment anywhere, this is the place. It was different to a brothel in that sense. And the degeneration of such an area could turn into a brothel, the high end of a knot time. And that it got famous for that. Mm. There are books written on this culture, and it produced amazing kind of singers. It employed people from all the musical arts and the decorative arts. So it became a center of a kind.
So who owned them? Who owned those buildings or the...
Well, it was a career for a lot of people, a way to earn money, because it was a whole business. Well, from what we read about it, without women, they couldn't run it. So it was run by matrons, had gone through it and could take care of the training aspect and other aspects of administration and running. But the domineering part was run by women. The business was run by women. Mm. And there are amazing writers which have come out of, you know, these areas because they are freer areas. They are more open for all kinds of discussions and arts. How about the wives of gentlemen who were coming in carriages and spending evenings at these courtesan small palaces? In Lucknowi culture, it was something the wives had seen their fathers live like that. Their brothers were also maybe following the same. And it was nothing objectionable about it as long as the husband was a good provider. Men managed to respect their wives and respect their responsibilities to their families, stayed with them. And if in the evenings they would feel they needed to get out of the house and
just like going to the club or
going to the club or go to the pub, you know, it was that kind of a thing. But in some cases, which one heard about and saw the victims arise out of these cases were the men who would spend all their time at these kind of places or ignored their other responsibilities or wanted to marry one of
the courtesans.
And so there are these exceptions.
Now, what language do they speak in Lucknow?
Predominantly, it was Urdu.
Did these houses have a name?
The mohalla name, the name of that locality would be like Chowk so-and-so, which Chowk is square.
Chowk, Chowk.
Yeah, Chowk is a square.
Square.
So it could be a Mohammadi Chowk or Liaquati Chowk or some other Chowk. Quarters like this existed in all major cities. In Delhi, in Lahore, in Bombay are famous quarters. But the cultural level was what was exceptional about Lucknow.
So these other towns, cities, was it more like a red light district?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And in some, it would be really pathetic, like Bombay slums. And the quality, it had a standard which was referred to and looked up to, and people would come from far away to even see that what is this culture. They were curious about it.
So how did the courtesan then become somebody's courtesan? And the Nawab went to the same courtesan. Did the courtesan ever move to his house?
Yeah, the courtesan could be invited into the palaces to perform. There are known courtesans who became very famous. And people vowed that on their ceremonies or weddings, there would be a courtesan invited to perform for 3 nights, let's say. Hmm. So she would come with her matron and with her team and, you know, perform in these palaces and things. So, and the other aspect of it was that if a man could pay to hire a courtesan for a period of time as exclusively his, that option was up to the man. That also existed. So the price could vary on how elaborate the system is and how coveted the lady is. So that was a marketplace in that sense that, you know, you pay for what you get. And if you want it for a longer time and exclusively yours, you pay more. So the danger between the private families was that as long as you want to be entertained, we will not notice it. But if you bring it into the home or if it affects the household, then it's not going to happen. Then the family would, you know, stick together. So the family would be the mothers, the wives. The wife's family could put pressure. And so there was always somebody being unhappy in this whole thing. Mm. I think it was the wives because they were the ones who had to hide the fact that their husbands were spending more time in this fashion than with them. And they got to do the work of running the household, bearing the children, looking after the elderly in the houses.
And the running of the house.
And the running of the house, the entire house. So the burden of it fell to the women. And I have read that tuberculosis was rampant in these ladies who were off these houses.
Why?
Because they were stressed out and they were depressed.
They were depressed.
Naturally, these are the women we are talking about from the private homes, the wives.
You know, people would say, oh, but it's the culture.
Well, as long as the husband can keep the wife provided for and happy. But that wasn't the case in a lot of instances. The husband could be addicted to tobacco or drink or to other things and never come home or needs to be helped, comes home every morning, he doesn't work, and he's a burden and he's not providing anything. The wife is going to be, you know. That was part of the deal, courtesan was part of the deal. Where was the husband going? He was going on to, no, they were never invited to, like, dinner. How about coming? Come and have dinner with me in my house. No. Absolutely. That was another world. Mm-hmm. And the men never wanted the worlds to meet, I would imagine. So this part of the private household was never talked about. A lot of writers have written about these cultures, but they are stories from the courtesan themselves. A very famous one is Umrao Jaan Ada, and that's a love story. Umrao Jaan Ada is the name of this main courtesan who falls in love with one of her customers, and she wants to leave the profession. It's a tragic end, but one of the first novels, in fact, of 19th century, and made into a number of films.
When this decline, which you've talked about a lot, first of the Mughals and now of the Lucknowi culture.
Yeah.
So we're now in the 19th century, I think. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, the decline of the Mughal culture is a background to how Lucknow got to this whole high standard of, you know, arts and crafts, and then the accumulation of all of them in one place.
Concentration
of that and the form that it had now of kind of a culture that was everybody in India knew what it was. So for myself, as a student of literature and being a filmmaker, this is amazing background to work in. I mean, if you want to know the condition of the way men behaved and the way women were exploited and how the woman found spaces for herself, and with the rapidly changing politics of the land as well. I mean, now the age-old concepts were changing into the new British colony status, and that was changing. So in this atmosphere, as a filmmaker, when I was aware that there was a lady from Awadh who was a wife and had now moved during partition to Pakistan and was now in her late 90s, I had not met her. So I got a phone call from a friend, and she said, you know, my mother-in-law always was very quiet and sedate, but suddenly she went into coma and she's come out with a very bright memory.
Really?
And she is talking a lot of things from her past. And Shirin, you are a filmmaker, but would you like to come over and just have a look at her? It would be great if you can document it for us.
And that's only half the story, Shirin told me that August evening. We then left centuries ago Lucknow and moved into more recent times, where we hope you'll join us to hear the second part of Shireen's story on Tidings on October 30th. You can hear Tidings on the second Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. All Tidings programs are produced by Tony Ernst and available as podcasts on hazelkahn.com.